Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a visit at the National Museum of World War II Aviation in Colorado Springs, Colorado, with 96-year-old retired Air Force Colonel Bill Roach. Big thanks to Mark Schaefer of Honor Flight Southern Colorado for introducing me to Bill, who served as a B-17 waist gunner with the 452nd Bomb Group during World War II.
You told us about your first mission. We know on your sixth you shot down and crash land in France, but what about leading up to that? Was there anything in those first few missions that maybe foreshadowed that? Some close calls or some experiences?
The mission at Hohenbudberg, we came back, we had 100 holes in our plane. That's the only thing I remember.
Only 100?
Only 100. And most of them, of course, were in the fuselage there in the wing area. But we were lucky we didn't have any big fighter attacks or anything like that during those 9 missions. The only German fighters that we saw were ME-262s. I never saw an FW or a 109.
And for those who don't know, the ME-262
I take that back. Yeah. I might have seen an ME-109 over Berlin. But we had it when we got hit over Berlin. We fell behind the formation, of course. We lost an engine, and gas was streaming over the wing and all that stuff. And we flew below the formation for about 20 minutes. We're almost out of the Berlin area when the pilot said, we'll never get back to England. We're losing altitude. So we made a decision to turn back and go east. So we flew all the way back over Berlin by ourselves, except that a squadron of P-51s, there were 12 of them in this group that followed us. They came, they were over on top of us, trying to get us to turn around. They thought we were lost, you know, and they kept wiggling their wings. You turn around this way. They had a Mosquito flying with them. We thought that was an ME-109 because they saw this strange plane, but it turned out to be a Mosquito. But these P-51s stayed with us for about 20 minutes till we got back over Berlin, and then they left. They took off, and we headed east and kept flying until we had to come down. And
I want to hear about that one. When you mentioned the 262s, I think most people listening who pay attention to this stuff, they know those were the early German jets. I imagine they're a little harder to hit with your machine gun in the waist than those.
We didn't have a chance. They zipped through the formation so fast, you could barely identify what they were. They just, I'll tell you, if they had had the pilots, they had the plane. They had all kinds of planes. They had the ME-262s lined up. They were being trained to ram us. You probably knew about that too, didn't you?
Mm.
They had this group that they trained to hit the bombers at a certain angle.
So we're giving people a little taste of what's to come here, but tell me about this first time you got shot down, when you guys had to come down in France. What happened on that mission?
Well, that was a bad crash. When I say a bad crash, it was successful. Nobody was hurt or killed. But we had a brand new navigator. This was his first mission. They took our navigator. He went to Mickey School. So we were getting spare navigators every time we flew. And this guy was his first mission. Anyway, you know, we were bombing off the lead cruise toward the end. We had Togaliers, not Bombardiers.
Sure.
When we got to Chemnitz, we got hit and we lost an engine and couldn't keep up with the formation. So we're trying to get to Brussels. Well, this navigator didn't know where in the hell he was. Because he wasn't keeping track. He was depending on the lead crew. So we ended up nowhere near Brussels. We crash-landed actually south of Orleans, France. And what happened was that when we came down, we were looking for some place to bring the plane down. We thought we might find an emergency field, but there wasn't anything available. So when we got down, we started throwing everything out of the plane, the machine guns that were not in the turrets. We threw out the ammunition boxes and things like that. We dropped the ball turret, got the ball turret gunner out of it first. And we dropped that ball turret, which left a big hole in the waist of the plane. So when we came around, the pilot got down. It was raining and snowing, and the pilot was running out of fuel. So he said, I've got to bring it down somewhere. So he saw a spot that he thought was a farm field. Well, when we got down toward the ground, you could tell it wasn't quite a farm field, although it was in a farm area. It was sort of a hilly thing. But we were running out of fuel, so he said, I'm going to go ahead and bring it in. So first time he came around, the plane hit our electrical system was shot out, so we didn't have flaps. The engineer had to crank them manually.
Wow.
And so we came around and he brushed this tree, and so he decided to come around and try again. So the second time we came in, we hit the side of a hill and skidded. We skidded up this hill, and of course, with all this mud, the crew, all the gunners in the back, we got in the radio room, and the pilots, the two pilots and the engineer were up front. The engineer was working like hell with the flaps. And anyway, when we hit, the mud came up through this hole in the waist right into the almost knocked us up to the top of the fuselage because of so much dirt and mud came in.
Wow.
But we skidded up the hill, and nobody was hurt. We stopped, and we saw some. We didn't know where in the hell we were. We thought we were still in Germany. We saw some people coming across the field, and so we didn't have anything except my waist guns. That was all we had for defense. And anyway, they turned out to be French farmers, so when they came over with their pitchforks and everything, they saw who we were. And the next thing we knew, they were siphoning gas off of our thing, and they were giving us a bottle of wine for a thing full of gasoline.
I mean, you just described that, and you have many times, I know, and you lived it. But as we try to put ourselves in your shoes, you're a 20-year-old kid, and you know this plane's going down. You think you're coming down in enemy territory.
Oh, yeah. We
you don't know if you're going to live or die.
We knew that, yeah.
What was going through your mind when you're back in that radio room bracing
for? Well, we were just hoping that the pilot knew what the heck he was doing, you know, and he was. Of course, this was his second crash landing.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, he had another one, of course, on the Berlin mission, which, God, that was a beautiful landing he made in Krakow, Poland. Well, it was near Krakow, a little village.
And what was his name?
Marksian, Alan Marksian. He was from Detroit, Michigan.
Mm.
And he was a little short guy. He always used a pillow in his seat when he was flying. But he was a good pilot. He was short, and the co-pilot was a real tall guy named Bob Hedinas. He was from Michigan. And Bob stayed in the Air Force. He flew every aircraft we had all the way up to C-141s, and he got out. He was flying with CIA, and he died about 7 or 8 years ago.
Were there some moments before you hit the side of that hill? Because you've already made one pass, and you were probably ready for the impact there.
Yeah.
And then you know you're coming back around. Were there some moments where the thought went through your mind, I may not survive this?
Well, yeah, of course. Absolutely, yeah. But we had faith in Markson. We had been with him now for a year and a half and, you know, going through training with him and everything. And so we kind of felt that he was going. We had the opportunity to bail out. He took a vote. He says, how many of you want to bail out? And we said, well, no, we'll go with you, you know, with the crash landing.
Wow.
Because none of us wanted to bail out. We thought we were still over Germany.
You figured bailing out means prisoner
POW.
Of war.
POW, yeah. Yeah.
And no idea whether you'd survive that or not.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, so you think these may be German civilians coming your way. You're thinking
well,
I may have
to. Well, that's what we thought at first, because we thought we were still over Germany. If we were headed for Brussels, we would have been. But we were way south of that, so.
So how big of a relief was it when you realized
well,
who these were?
Well, it was quite a relief. We spent about a week there. This was liberated France, of course. There was an American troop carrier group at Orleans, and the crash landing where we went was a town called Assigny. It's in the wine-growing region. And this troop carrier group was at Orleans, which was about 60 kilometers from where we came down. Matter of fact, they sent some mechanics up to the crash site to see what they could do with the aircraft. Well, they couldn't get it off the hill and everything, so they stripped it, took the engines off and everything they could get off the plane. And that plane sat on the hill until it disappeared. Every Frenchman within 100 miles had a piece of the airplane. Because when I went back 58 years later, I went back to the site because some young Frenchmen were doing a story on our crash there.
Right.
As a matter of fact, it was in all of the. There was about 7 or 8 newspapers that were covering it, and he did a really good story. But anyway, when we went back there, they had a big ceremony, and with the French veterans were there with the flags flying. They gave me a Jeroboam. You know what a Jeroboam is of wine?
Yeah.
It's a 3-liter bottle.
Uh-huh.
It was a black bottle, and engraved in gold, they had a B-17 on this bottle, and the date of the crash, my name, and the hill we crashed on called La Fête de Marne was the name of the hill. They gave me all kinds of stuff, and I laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And it was, I mean, absolutely, they treated me like I was a member of the family.
Beautiful.
But when we crash landed, the night we crash landed, there was a wedding going on in the village. And our two pilots and the engineer went to the wedding, whereas the rest of us stayed in the airplane. We had to sleep in the plane. They slept in some Frenchman's house. But we were there almost a week waiting to get back to England. Finally, mm-hmm. this troop carrier group, they sent a truck up. They took us in a C-47, flew us back to England.
So now you've already dodged one bullet, so to speak, yeah. right? And now you're going to be flying more missions. Was yes. your mindset or perspective different after having gone through that?
Well, you know, we felt a little more at ease. We knew what it was like, you know. And so this time we were flying. We flew four missions in 1 week because we crash landed twice in the same month. Mm-hmm. You know, in 6th and the 26th. And these were long missions. They were into, you know, Munich and Nuremberg and then Berlin. And, of course, everybody was a little bit frightened about going to Berlin, even at that stage of the war, because they had a hell of a lot of flak.
Yeah. You flew those 9 missions. When you guys are going through a field of flak, what's it like for you?
Well, that's the scariest part of it. You can't do anything about it. And we had these flak suits, and we had extra flak suits that we'd stick underneath us to protect our testicles and things. Mm-hmm. But still, if a piece of flak hit nearby, all those fragments come shooting through that narrow aluminum. And so that was the most dangerous part of flying. It was the flak, I felt. Mm-hmm. And we lost many more planes to flak than we did to fighters. You know, when the flak hit, if it hit an airplane, it made a direct hit, the damn plane blew up.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, just exploded, just disappeared. And that, boy, that's a terrible way to die.
Did you see that happen?
No, I never saw a plane blow up. No, I saw a couple go down, but I never saw one blow up.
And so your 9th mission is Berlin. Tell me about that mission. How did that unfold?
Well, that was a long mission, and we dropped our bombs over the target, and it looked like everything was going okay. We had some hits. We could feel the hitting the wings and so forth. But it got one of our engines, knocked the engine out, and fuel started flowing over the wing, according to the reports. We started losing altitude. We had to feather that engine, of course, and we couldn't keep up with the formation. So when the pilot decided, I guess the two pilots got together and said, well, we're not going to make it. They looked at their fuel and figured out how far it was and so forth. So they decided to go east, and we turned around. And that's when I told you we had the P-51s. It was cold. We were flying in February, 69 below zero.
Mm.
That's one thing that people don't really understand.
With no pressurized
With no
cabin.
Heat. Yep. No heat and no pressurization. And
yep.
I, on one mission, I forget which one it was, my ear was bent in my helmet. And when I got on the ground that night and I looked in the mirror, my damn ear was like that. It's huge. It frostbitten on my ear.
Mm. Like twice the size it should have been, huh?
Yeah, it was. And you can imagine what would happen if that went over a period of time, over your foot or your leg or something.
So you did tell us about those 12 P-51s that took you the 20 minutes back to Berlin. How significant was that? Do you think that may have saved your life, their presence there?
Well, there were no German fighters anywhere around at that time that we saw, so.
So maybe
we
not.
We don't know if they were sort of like a shield or what, but on that particular occasion, it was pretty good to see a couple of friendly fighters. Yeah.
But so your pilots made the decision to go east because you couldn't go west far enough to get back to England.
That's right.
So they're just hoping to get to some allied held territory.
We had actually been briefed before the mission to do that. You know, and they told us, make sure that they told you that the Russians are trigger happy and be careful, because we had some B-17s were shot down by Russian fighters.
Sure.
So we knew that that was the thing to do rather than to try to get back to England.
So they knew what to do, but they didn't know how it would all unfold and what other surprises were still to come. Hear it as Bill remembers it when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.